This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
On the UAE's number one talk radio station, Dubai Eye 103.8.
You're listening to the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. I'm Helen and we are talking children's health, parenting and education on today's show. And joined us in the studio was Dr. Samina Dornan, the first female specialist in maternal fetal medicine from the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists of London. She's here in Dubai. We were talking high-risk pregnancies, C-sections and when to have a water birth. Usma Asker is helping parents who need support bringing up children of determination. Why can coaching help and what support needs to be in place? Aventura was on hand. They've created activities and play areas based on research for child development. So zip lining to make them smarter, we'll be finding out. And in conversation with Leon Douglas, a PT who has an interest in training kids, not just on the exercise front, but on what to eat as well. And I was talking to children's author Hilda Youssef. She was a hotelier and now she's tackling big issues for little ones.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Very lucky to have stolen away one of Dubai's most in-demand doctors. For an hour, joining us in the hot seat today is Dr. Samina Dornan, consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist. She is the first female specialist in maternal fetal medicine from the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists of London to come here to Dubai, and she's going to be found at Al Zahra Hospital. Doctor, thank you so much for being with us. As I said, you're very busy. I think we've had a bit of a baby boom of late and really do appreciate your time and your expertise, and you're happy to take some questions from anyone that wants to get in touch.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and absolutely lovely to be here with Helen and in the studio and talking to all of you. It's a hot seat. It gives me an opportunity to, you know, answer your questions. So very happy to be here.
We're going to maybe clear up some myths as well. But the most important thing is really offering you the chance to ask any questions that might be on your mind about, well, getting pregnant, but staying pregnant and having a happy and healthy baby or babies, as the case may be. We will be talking about multiples as well. But before we get to my questions and indeed those that are coming in on the text line, Doctor, what initially attracted you to this area of medicine?
Oh, well, you see what? I never wanted to become a doctor. And my father, you know, wanted me. I wanted to fly an aeroplane. But anyway, I'm so glad I became a doctor. And when I was studying and I was doing these attachments that you do in the hospitals, I realized that I loved working with women. You know, women's brain is multidimensional. And I am saying it in the nicest possible way that men's brain is two-dimensional. Okay? So whether it is a good thing or a bad thing, and I love what we think about, nobody can think about. So women and empowering women and working with them became my passion. And that's why I became obstetrician and gynecologist.
And I think it's such an amazing job because you see women sometimes at their happiest, sometimes devastated, often at their most vulnerable. And I thinking back to my own pregnancies, it's such an emotionally intense time. And for someone to come in and be able to handle a situation and be that port in a storm a lot of the time, it's a huge amount of responsibility.
It is.
How many babies do you think you've delivered now?
Oh, thousands. But you know what? It is an intense time. But I want you guys all to think it's a miracle. That's why in the old Asian time, women were goddesses because they produced this miracle baby. So yes, intense it is, but also enjoy the godlike status.
I think we forget, in honesty, what a remarkable thing it is to give birth. You know, we obviously see it through movies and social media, but we actually forget what a huge toll it takes on the body. And it's ultimately something of a trauma for many women, emotionally and physically. And perhaps that's downplayed a bit. And I hope that any women who have had a baby or are planning a baby listening today, know how incredible you are as a woman. And if we can help you in any way, as I said, with that fertility or with pregnancy, Dr. Dawn is with us through until 3 o'clock today. So, Doctor, what are some of the issues that are coming into clinic? What's been keeping you busy here in Dubai?
I think the issues are all around the world the same. Women are same all around the world. It doesn't matter where you come from, what Asian background or European background you have, what religion you have. All women wants to have a baby, most of them, and want to have a healthy baby and and do their best. So the issues are always the same. Am I doing the right thing? Am I eating the right thing? Am I sleeping the right way? And to be honest, most of the time, the anxieties are produced nowadays by these social medias, which are naturally unregulated. And I tell the women only one thing, and I want you to remember that. Think back about your mother and grandmother and great-grandmother. Was there any Google to tell them they should sleep flat or on the side or right side or left side, and what they should or what multivitamins they should take? So please relax. Your body has been produced in such a way by God or science or whatever you believe in that it can cope with most of the things. What you need to do is nourish your mind. If your mind is strong, your body is going to follow.
And that might mean unfollowing certain people on social media.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
In the hot seat today, Doctor of the Hour is Dr. Samina Dornan, consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist at Al Zahra, taking your questions and indeed mine. And we are going to go to the text line and lots of messages coming in, unsurprisingly. We mentioned multiples before and an awful lot of them here in Dubai, Dr. Dornan.
That's right.
How common are they, and what kind of challenges do you face as a doctor when it comes to delivering multiple?
Well, 3 women out of 100 will have a twin pregnancy, and that is the usual. But because of the increasing age of the mothers, that women are delaying their pregnancies, the twins are more common in older mothers. And also at the same time, because infertility treatment is on the rise again because of the older age. So infertility is quite commonly associated with the multiple births. So yes, overall, it is massive. They have massively increased throughout the world.
And there's a huge amount of support here in Dubai around Twins Plus Arabia. So if you're looking for that kind of community side, absolutely urge you to get in touch with those. On the medical side, Nats has messaged in saying, twins run in my family, and while I'm not planning a family anytime soon, the thought of a C-section terrifies me, especially given how common they are in Dubai. Can you deliver twins naturally here?
Yes, in general, the answer would be yes. But it a lot depends on how the twins are behaving, which kind of a twins they are. Are they the one which are sharing the placenta, which we call mashima in Arabic, and or they are non-identical twins. They have their own placentas, or which way they are lying, which one is coming first, and is it head down? So there are many, many things about twins and mode of delivery. But can I just say, please do not be terrified by a cesarean section. It's an old concept that mothers die and this and that. I have in my so many years of career, if I have lost a mother, the unit has lost a mother, it was a vaginal delivery, not to a cesarean section. And this is not promoting cesarean section, but this is just taking your fear away. Mm-hmm. Please do not be afraid of cesarean section. If there is a proper indication for it, please go for it.
Thank you for that. I think that informed decision and working with a doctor that you trust is, my birth plan was literally music, drugs, trust the doctor. That was it.
I love that birth plan, and I'm going to implement it in Al Zahra Hospital.
I just felt like expectation could be the root of all heartache. I was like, yeah. I'm not going to be talking about tea lights and, you know, no. This, that and the other. It's like, no, let's just get the baby out as safely as possible.
And if it was 60 years ago and it was Ireland, they would have added a Guinness as well to it.
for your iron.
Yes.
Right, to the text line, a couple of anonymous messages here, Dr. Dornan, saying, is it safe to plan a pregnancy while having hemorrhoids that cause lots of discomfort and pain?
Well, not nice to have hemorrhoids because they are very painful and, you know, you need to get rid of them. It's very easy treatment nowadays. It is safe to have a pregnancy, but they will become worse in pregnancy and really very more painful. So I strongly recommend that you go and see a general surgeon, get rid of them and then have a pregnancy.
Thank you for that. A message here saying, I've had 4 healthy pregnancies and still have the itch to have a fifth. I'm 43 and a little apprehensive on the risks of having a healthy pregnancy. My question is, the doctor, do you see a lot of success stories at 43 plus?
My oldest mother was 54. Now, naturally, it wasn't a natural conception. It was IVF, but who cares? You know, and she had twins and she's as happy as Larry. So age is in our heads. Society, move on, you know, have a baby whenever you want to. Is there more risk? Of course there are risks. There are always risks with everything. There is a risk with crossing a road, but you don't stop crossing the road. So if you want to have a fifth baby, go for it. And now it is much easier for us to monitor you, much easier screening test as far as it comes to chromosomal abnormalities. You know, the tests are now, the best test is what is called NIPT, non-invasive prenatal test, which is commonly called Harmony. We just take a blood from you and give you with 99.9% accuracy if the baby is chromosomally normal or not, what we call it commonly Down syndrome. So absolutely, it should not be a hindrance. Go for it.
And I would like to add to that, can we please have a petition to end the phrase geriatric pregnancies? It's a horrible term.
Well, can I just tell you something? In the medical books, anyone who is above the age of 28 and having their first baby, they are called elderly primae gravida.
Oh, come on.
So to be honest, that means that over 70-80% of women are geriatric. So don't be upset by that term.
Right, to the text line, Dr. Dornan. No name on this one, saying, I'm having a C-section in September and I'm a bit worried as I'm obese. BMI is 37. I know it's a risk. I've read that it can cause maternal death. So I was just wondering if other plus-size ladies have had C-sections and are okay.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and cesarean sections are quite common in obese patients. For some reason, they don't labor very well. We'll not go into detail, scientific detail about this. So if you are having a cesarean section, whatever indication it is, whether it is mental or physical, they're both equally important. Nowadays, we have mastered the science of cesarean section, and your obstetrician will be spot on about these things. So she will make sure that you know, it is performed at the right time, in the right place, and it's the proper way of doing a cesarean section. And then post-cesarean, where the clotting and the problem comes, you know, they make sure that you are properly hydrated, mobilized, you wear those very unattractive, tent stockings. So, and then you go home on 10 days of a blood thinning injections. So, please don't be terrified. Enjoy the last few weeks.
I was just about to say, congratulations and enjoy it.
Yes, enjoy it.
Now, Otto's been in touch with a really interesting question and something that kind of haunted me through my second pregnancy, which was, how accurate are weight estimations of the baby? My wife is 36 weeks and the doctor is worrying her with phrases like very big baby. Concerned she's dropping hints for an induction, which my wife would really rather avoid. We're first time parents. Thank you. Well, congratulations to you, Otto, and your wife. I had this with my second very big baby. I was like, well, what do you want me to do? Like, I'm not going to stop eating because she's measuring big. And sure enough, she was 3.6. So very average indeed. Yeah. So what is that kind of, I guess, parameters of accuracy when it comes to measuring?
Well, you see, ultrasound weight measurements are not 100% accurate, even in expert hands like mine. And I'm a maternal fetal medicine subspecialist. We talk about two standard deviations. So we are wrong, you know, 20% here and there. So that is not the point when we are measuring the fetuses. The point is that where the fetus should be, and every 2 weeks or 4 weeks when we measure, the graph needs to move in that direction. Big baby can be 3 kg and big for the mother, if she's very short and, you know,
petite.
And big baby can be, you know, 4 kg and it probably is okay for a woman and she can deliver her vaginally. So there are other indications. The head doesn't get engaged, especially if it's your first baby. The head should engage unless you belong to a typical different type of Africans in which the head doesn't engage till they are in labor. So there is a lot of science and discussion. If, you know, it is very important that you trust your doctor. And if you don't, you need to go for second opinion, because there's nothing worse than having a doubt in your head.
That's exactly what I was about to say, because I've seen so many messages and had messages myself about, when is it too late to change a doctor? I would say never. I mean,
never.
You need to be in hands that you trust. You need to be with someone that you like, hopefully. Yeah. And if that's not the case, if you already have fears or anxieties around the birth, to then be confronted with someone that you don't want to be in a room with.
And to be honest, ask, discuss, you know, you are pregnant, you're not sick mm-hmm. or stupid. So ask, discuss. And if the consultant is saying that I would like to induce you, then ask why. And, you know, scientifically discuss these things. All the information is available on the web. Can I just tell you one of the best way to look for information? For example, whenever you are Googling anything, for example, you want to Google a big fetus, yeah, big baby, not baby, but make it fetus, big fetus mode of delivery. Whatever medical information you are Googling, add at the end of it patient information. Patient information by law has to be produced by a registered medical organization, and they are always accurate and they filter all that rubbish that you see on the internet.
That is a great bit of advice there. Yeah. I'm very curious, talking of big babies, what's the largest baby you've delivered?
5 kg. And I was in Ireland, in the middle, in the depth of Ireland, and it was Limerick. And I delivered this baby. And you know what? I was suturing a mother. This was her 8th baby. Oh, you know, goodness. She was a farmer's wife. And oh, my Lord. And I was suturing her. And I suddenly heard a gasp in the room. It was the midwives who, you know, and when I turned around, the baby had turned in the incubator. Newborn babies don't turn. This one was turning. You know, so it was hilarious. It was fantastic.
Good, strong Irish stock.
Yes.
Love it.
Indeed.
Dr. Dornan, oh my goodness, my eyes are watering. 5 kilos. we have got you for another half hour. Dr. Dornan, as I said, lots of questions coming in. No name on this one. You can be completely anonymous. 4001 is the SMS saying, why is THS always going high in pregnancy? This is a thyroid question,
right.
I believe.
Yes. Well, no, it doesn't always go higher in pregnancy. It should be within normal limits. If it is low, it is serious and you should be on thyroxine. And if it is high, it needs to be treated. You need to see an endocrinologist. So there are certain levels, you know, in pregnancy, the normal ranges. So please go and discuss with your obstetrician and gynecologist.
Family Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Really happy to welcome to the studio this afternoon Dr. Samina Dornan, consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist, and she's also the first female specialist in maternal and fetal medicine from the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists of London to come here to Dubai. You can find her at Al Zahra Hospital and indeed on Dubai I-103.8 this afternoon. Going to the text line, Doctor, and lots of messages coming in for you, and I'm not surprised because this is a time of anxiety and questions and not knowing where to turn for reliable information. So this is your chance to maybe get an expert second opinion. We've already touched on this, but for the benefit of the listener, let's answer this. It's my first pregnancy and I'm having natural twins. Congratulations. How likely is it to have a vaginal twin birth, or are C-sections more likely with a first-time twin birth?
Well, I think we answered a little bit of it before, that if they are twins who are sharing the placenta, there will be a chance that this should be a cesarean section. If it is a vaginal birth, it needs to be in theater, because sometimes the second twin gets into trouble when the first one is delivered and it can bleed into the placenta. And that is why it has to be a very controlled delivery. So vaginal delivery is possible if they are uncomplicated identical twin. But if they are dichorionic twins, two placenta, and the first one is head down and the second one is not bigger than the first one, then vaginal birth is absolutely possible. Again, they should do a delivery in a theater, because sometime again the second twin can get into trouble, not as severe a trouble as in an identical, but they can. So very much possible, yes.
And very big congratulations. That's exciting.
It is.
I wanted to ask you about so-called natural deliveries and also water births as well, which I know is something that's now available here in Dubai. What are some of the guidelines that we need to be aware of when it comes to water births? Some characteristics or risks that mums and dads need to know?
So water birth, I mean, these are those things that women hear about them. And then a lot of women come to my clinic and say, I want to have a water birth. And I usually say to them, you can have whatever type of a birth you want. You can deliver under the bush, you know, that's fine. But as far as you are safe and the baby is safe, and I will intervene where I need to. Water is used usually to relieve pain, and it can help with it in some extent, but It is more psychological. It doesn't do more than that. What water birth is best is in your second pregnancy, once you have had your first normal vaginal delivery, because the first labor is very, very long. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine you can't be in the water for 10, 12 hours. And first labor is long and painful, so you end up with a epidural, which you can't be in the water. And the other thing is, on the first birth, we sometime have to give you an episiotomy, or you naturally tear. And if we don't give you a pelvic support, you can tear all the way to the back passage, which is not a nice thing. So that is why first baby most of the time is not a good idea for water birth. But second baby, I promise you, if you want to have a water birth, come to Al Zahra and we shall do that.
I've heard it's a lovely room as well, with there twinkly lights and things. I mentioned my birth plan earlier, which was simply do what the doctor says, have all the drugs, and hopefully put some music on. But I wanted to talk to you about expectations of parents, because I feel like that is such a difficult topic for lots of mums who might not have had the birth they want. They might have gone in saying, you know, I want to be drug free and I want to deliver to a particular song. And I guess that kind of natural word is something that we're hearing so much about and attached to so much expectation of an idyllic birth. How do you go about managing expectations around that?
That is so true, Helen. You're spot on with that. A lot of patients enters my room and they say, I want everything natural. And I usually laugh and I tell them the only natural thing which is left about labor is laboring without makeup.
I don't know anyone in Dubai that does that.
Exactly. So look, when you are a first time mother, don't make too much expectations, because then you disappoint yourself if you don't follow all of them. And then you feel like a failure, which is a very bad thing to go through.
Especially with the hormones immediately after. And for some mums, it's like a grief. It's grieving for an experience that you wanted to have desperately.
You are so right. And I have had few of those. Look, society makes you think that you are a lesser of a woman if you don't take epidural. You are lesser of a woman if you don't end up with a vaginal delivery. These are old concepts. And I want you to break them. You are an individual. All women should not be treated in the same way. So what you do is, what Helen, just have an open plan. Okay, go minute by minute, week by week, day by day, and in labor hour by hour. See how you feel. If you want to have an epidural, have it. You want to get into the water tub, go. You know, so, but don't make a long list. And you know, I have seen that all my life. The longer the list of expectation and birth plan, the more it is out of the window. Mm-hmm. So open-mindedness is what I want you to see, because you don't know how your body is going to behave. How is your pain threshold? You have never labored before. So what do you know? Nothing, just from the books. So please give yourself a credit and a space and enjoy your labor as much as you enjoy your pregnancy.
Well said indeed. Dr. Dornan, we've got time for one more question, and I think this is a very Dubai question. First time pregnancy here, so maybe I'm being overly precious, but today someone had parked so close to my car on both sides. She doesn't name them all, but I've got my suspicions. But I had to really squeeze to get in. It wasn't painful, but it did put pressure and certainly not comfortable on my stomach. Now I'm really worried it might have caused some damage. I'm 20 weeks, but do have a sizable bump for this stage of pregnancy.
This is quite a common question which people usually ask. The biggest problem that when you should go to the hospital is when you are hit on your bum. It's not about just squeezing yourself, you know. And I think these are just a muscular trauma. And at 20 weeks, you know, babies are very, very small. But remember, babies are very safe in your uterus. So little things like these are not going to hurt the baby. I think you have just squeezed yourself too much and have hurt your abdominal muscles. But I am 100% sure that baby is fine. But if your pain continues, it is the mental agony that I don't want you to go through.
Get that peace of mind.
Yes. So then go and see somebody. There is no harm in that.
This happened to me when I was about 8 months pregnant. And let's just say I left quite a salty note on the car windscreen. Hopefully they learnt their lesson. Dr. Dornan, we've run out of time. I can't thank you enough for your time today. An absolute pleasure to have you in the studio. And thank you again to all of the answers, the insights you've offered. We were talking about big babies before. Message here saying, I had three kids, 3.9, 4 and 4.1 kg, all natural births. See, women are amazing.
Women are amazing.
Dr.
Thank
Dornan,
you very much.
Thank
Great
you.
To be here.
And you can find Dr. Dornan there at Al Zahra Hospital.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are talking children's health, parenting and education this afternoon, and I think it's safe to say that all parents need support, but even more so when you do have a child of determination. Usma joining us now. She's the founder and CEO of Usma Asker Coaching and Consulting. She's a coach and a mentor for children of determination and their families. She has a legal background, training in human rights, and believes that every human being has a voice that should be heard and valued. Usma joining us now. Lovely to have you with us. I would love to, if you don't mind, to start with your journey, really, and a bit about your family, Usma, especially regarding your son that brought you to where you are today. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Sure. Thank you very much, firstly, Helen, to have me on Dubai Eye, and thank you for this wonderful opportunity. A little bit about me, Helen. Mother of three beautiful boys, 12, 10 and 6. And it's really my eldest who brought me to this journey and where I am today. You know, going back 11 years ago, I could see something different. I could see his behavior was, you know, different. His the way he would interact with other children, the way he was around other children was very different. And that made me come to, you know, figure out, okay, there's something going on. And I didn't even know the word autism existed. And I did some research like you do on Google. Mm-hmm. And I realized it could be something like that. And this is going back 10, 11 years. And, you know, back then here in the UAE, we didn't have that many services available in comparison to now. And I feel very blessed now. And really, the role as a mother and as a caregiver was kind of just, the responsibility was quite heavy then. And I had to do all my research and figure out what to do with him. And that's how my journey started, just figuring out how to work with him, how to support him with the challenges that he was facing in a social environment. Mm-hmm. And that's why I pretty much started my journey then and left my career behind back then, 11 years ago.
One of the big challenges that we hear time and time again is that education piece, you know, struggling for inclusion in a mainstream school, perhaps struggling with finances to pay for a school that is aimed at children of determination. And you've taken the decision to educate him at home. Can you tell us about how you came to decide that?
Correct. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I started homeschooling him, you know, pretty much immediately when he was that age, you know, trying to figure out skills that he needed to be taught. I did try school. I'm not going to lie. We were in and out of school and nursery. But the real reason why I'm homeschooling is because school didn't work for him. You know, it's I think we put a lot of stress on putting our children at school and giving them that environment. But we need to figure out what works for our children. Every child is so different. And sometimes school is not the answer. Mm-hmm. We need to figure out an environment that's suitable for them. And in my case, my son really did not thrive in that environment. And I had to figure out and create an environment that was, you know, that worked for him, hence the homeschooling journey with him. And he's thriving now. I mean, we've pretty much been working on all areas of development, his academic, his social, emotional development. And he's literally thriving in this environment and it's working for him. And I believe as parents, we shouldn't stress so much on that. Mm-hmm. You know, we should look at what works for our children. Mm-hmm. That's really important.
As I said, you had worked with human rights and a legal background, and now you're working as a coach and mentor, obviously really specialising in this area, something that you've known so much about and learned so much about over the last decade. What are some of the other challenges you're finding parents who have children of determination struggling with, whether it is on that kind of really micro day-to-day detail or the big far-reaching decisions that families need to make?
Yeah, I think it's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. It is overwhelming. The initial diagnosis stage, or not even having the diagnosis, but not knowing what's going on, is overwhelming. But the most important thing I would like to share is really believing in yourself. Once you believe in yourself and you accept your child the way they are, you can do so much more with them. Not having that fear of, you know, holding yourself back. And not just relying on outside sources. Of course, you know, if therapy is needed, if the school is the right environment for your child, do that. but make yourself, you know, so empowered and so strong as parents that you can work with your children and create the environment for you and your children or your child at home that's safe and that's, you know, it's a warm environment for them to work, to be in. And that's really important. And that's the coaching part is important because it's a mindset shift. Mm-hmm. Initially, when we find out our child is, you know, on the spectrum or there's some challenges or learning disabilities, we automatically create this fear. And the moment we release that fear and let go, we can do so much more with them.
That's such an interesting insight. And I want to come back to the word you used, Usma, which was acceptance. Do you find a lot of parents kind of fight against a diagnosis because it's something that they don't want for their children? They fear that stigma, that labelling.
Yeah, absolutely. I do. And it's, again, a personal choice. I think having a diagnosis is a very, very personal choice for that, you know, particular individual. In my case, I did go for the diagnosis because I needed clarity. Mm-hmm. I just needed to be able to move forward and have a clear roadmap in place to work with him. And sometimes not having a diagnosis, it's okay too. You just work with the challenges that come your way with your child. But it's a very, very personal choice.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Joining us live on the line now is the founder and CEO of Usma Asker Coaching and Consulting. Usma is a coach and mentor for children of determination and their families too. She's got a background in legal and training in human rights and now homeschools her son who's 12, who was diagnosed much earlier in his life, and she's now dedicated her life to helping other parents going through similar challenges. Can I ask you, Usma, what form does that coaching take on a practical level? What happens when a family comes to you?
This is a great question, Helen. With the practical job that I do, I include coaching and mentoring. And with coaching, I actually work on the client's mindset. So like we mentioned earlier, parents are very overwhelmed, anxious, nervous, you know, afraid. There's so many different feelings that come into play when it comes to the child's diagnosis or just their journey with the challenges that they may be facing. So we work on coaching in that area. And then when it comes to mentoring, I specifically work with practical tools and support and provide the parents with a solution that works best for their family. So I like to work in both areas, not just coaching, but coaching and mentoring.
Can you give us some examples of what mentoring might look like? Some ways that you have helped people that would perhaps be kind of tangible to anyone who perhaps doesn't have a child of determination?
Absolutely. I had a client not so long ago, and she, a Down syndrome client, the mother was my client and the daughter was at a therapy, you know, at a center and having therapies for many years. And when she did come to me, her academic level was pretty much kindergarten level, and her mother was concerned and wanted her obviously to progress in her academics and her social skills. So what we did with the mentoring, we created a roadmap, and we created a system that would work for the family. And she was homeschooled at this time, and the mum literally sat with me and went through and brainstormed curriculum choices that worked for her and worked for the family. And the social skills that were needed, we provided a system that would work for that. And we, you know, literally I let go of the family, and then they went off and did what was given to them as homework. And the student, you know, she came back, the mother came back saying she's doing so well. She's picked up on some of the academic skills, and the gaps that were in her learning have been pretty much covered. And she's now progressing to the next level. And in terms of her social skills, when she was out and about, she would be very nervous to converse, and a lot of practice was, you know, there was a lot of opportunities where there was practice, you know, given to her in a social environment. And now she was there speaking out, meeting people, greeting people, and she was flourishing pretty much. And it just took a few sessions where we planned a system that worked for them, and off the parents went to do the work, and we had positive results.
Oh, well, anonymous message here saying, I just want to say that looking after children with special needs is a full-time job and a lonely one. I can see you nodding along there, Usma.
Yeah.
When it comes to getting support, whether that is through, you know, online or Facebook groups or meeting other parents or even having a level of understanding of the struggles that parents have, not having time for themselves, not having, you know, opportunity perhaps to pursue their own, you know, social life and interests. How important is it to have someone that understands where you are?
It's very important. Really, it's so, so important. I mean, when I started my journey with my son, it was just me and my husband. It was a very lonely journey. It was isolating and it wasn't a healthy one mm-hmm. at all. And so many parents feel this way now. And we're very blessed. We're very blessed. Currently, we have so much support in the UAE. We have a support system. We have, you know, Facebook groups, WhatsApp groups in the community. And if you do feel like that, seek help. Don't, you know, feel that you need to be alone. There are so many parents out there that are going through similar struggles. And when I was going through it, I thought I was the only parent. I thought I was the only one suffering or going through these challenges on a daily basis. But the minute I met other parents, I just felt so supported and I felt heard without any judgment. So don't feel worried or concerned that there isn't. There are support systems out there. And it takes a child, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to our children, we need more than that. So we need people that are like-minded. We need people that can hear us without any judgment. Mm-hmm. So definitely don't feel alone and don't isolate yourself at all.
If you do want as much details, do feel free to message me on 4001. I'd be happy to connect you. And a message from Connie here saying, much of the support we need as a family is financial. Our son is 7 and non-verbal. Is there any assistance for paying for therapies? I think this is, I'm sure you hear this all the time, because as you say, sometimes it's something you can do at home and sometimes it is a case of bringing in experts, whether it's physiotherapy, speech therapy. I wish more insurance companies would wake up to the fact that this is a very real need for so many families. Do you see that changing, or is there anything you know that you could share with Connie and any other families in the same situation, Isma?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, Helen, it's we hope there's going to be changes in this because it is expensive. And, you know, paying fees for school, paying for a shadow teacher, for example, you know, everything just incurs to like a huge amount. And then having to like pay for therapies is very expensive. For now, we're working on this. And, you know, fingers crossed things can change soon and will change soon. But for now, I would just say, take every opportunity to attend, you know, free workshops, free seminars. There's lots of things going on online, and just create this awareness for yourself and educate yourself. And this is why I'm here. I believe in empowering the parents, because once you have the skills, you know, once you have the skills to work with your children, you do not need to spend a lot of money outside. When there's a need, of course, you know, do that. But if there isn't a need, then you can work on certain things yourself once you have that awareness and the knowledge. So just, you know, make use of any kind of free workshops that are going on online, connecting with other parents, sharing ideas, you know, tips. And, you know, for now, that's something I would mm-hmm. say. But hopefully there will be change in this and more insurance companies, you know, will provide some sort of, you know, support or some kind of discount, I hope, because we need that as parents.
Absolutely.
We really, really do.
I know you're collaborating with many centres and organisations here as well. Can you tell us a bit more about that? Because maybe that could be useful for parents listening today.
Of course, yeah. I mean, centres here in Dubai and Abu Dhabi are amazing. We're doing a lot of collaboration because I feel we need so many people to work together in this, to raise an awareness, to kind of shake the system a little mm-hmm. bit for more awareness and more acceptance in this. So with collaborations that we're taking part in, it's raising that awareness and creating an understanding and just offering a support system for the families that's so needed out there. It's so important.
Lastly, Isma, I know your son is being homeschooled, but when we look at those mainstream schools, which a lot of families would love their children to be included in, and I mean included in the true sense of the word rather than just attending, how far do you think we've come in the region and what needs to change?
I think, you know, Helen, we have come far. Now, if I compare my journey to 10 years ago and to now, there's so much more work being done in this area. And there is change, and change is happening. Change is taking place daily in the background. And I think schools are more aware of it, which is great. And the first thing I would say for parents is really advocating. If there's anything that they're concerned about with the school system, or if there's something not working, or they're attending meetings where, you know, the goals may not be set properly, or they want to set different goals for their child, speak up. don't be afraid. Schools are listening. Schools want to work with you. And just be their voice, be your children's voice, and, you know, make yourself be heard, and don't be afraid about it, because it's there's a change and more change is taking place.
Usma, absolute pleasure to have you with us. Thank you for sharing your experiences, but also how you're able to help others who might have the same challenges, or perhaps you can learn from them. And it goes both ways, I think, in this situation. It's lots of sharing, lots of understanding, lots of really understanding what resources are out there, and you're absolutely a fantastic one. So if you do want Usma's details, feel free to get in touch with us, 4001. And Usma, if you want to give your website a mention, I'm sure a lot of people would be keen to hear it.
Yep, thank you. www.coachingwithusma.com.
Thank you so much, Usma Asker, joining us here on Afternoons with me, Helen Farmer.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Talking children's health, parenting and education today, and I'm sure, talking about going back in time, many of you grew up like me, playing on the streets, making dens, parks with friends, being told to come back when it's dark. Basically, no phones, no Netflix, no computers to distract us. Today, though, many of us have to force our kids to put down those gadgets and get active. One place that definitely keeps them on their toes is Aventura. They've created play areas and activities that are specially focused on child development. And joining us now is the co-founder, managing director, Lena. Great to have you with us. And please don't tell the answer, Lena. You're a friend of the show and you're not allowed to win that laptop. How are you?
Thanks, Helen. How are you doing? I'm great. Thanks.
I am really well. It's I love Aventura. I think it's a fantastic space, not just for kids, but for big kids too, for zip lining, climbing, being in nature, even in the middle of Dubai. And you've done a lot of research around child development and are actually catering a lot of your camps and play areas to exactly this. Can you tell us about the research that you did and some of the key findings?
Yeah, so we did a lot of research in the U.S. and Europe and compared a lot of it to what was available in the UAE, even from inception. And we found that it was the importance of interactive activities, actually learning while doing, is so important to child development. How learning through play stimulates social interaction, autonomy, and problem-solving skills. And really, one of the key things that we found that was at the time and is the importance of nature and being around green spaces in child development. Much of what you just said, playing in that backyard, running around and feeling free.
Learning through play, I think, is a really interesting one. And I think a lot of that can, as you say, could be due with learning about nature, learning what's around us. But some of it's about learning our own kind of boundaries, you know, what we're comfortable with. What's the height that we start to get a bit freaked out at? When is a, you know, risky play worth the risk? And I know what you do is obviously very safe, you know, ropes and helmets and all of
Thanks
that.
Thanks for reminding people that, yes.
No, but I think, you know, yes. we hear this phrase all the time, this kind of like snowplow parent, where we don't want to put our children in situations where they might be a little bit afraid, where they might be kind of testing their limits of height and play and comfort. And, you know, just wanting them to be totally sheltered at all times. And you're kind of going back a little bit to those basics of, you know, play fundamentals. How are parents responding to that?
They love it. You know, some parents are still a little bit helicopter at the beginning when we first go through the training and teach the children how to use the Clickit system, and they're not really sure if it's going to keep them safe at height. But then once they see the autonomy that comes out and the self-confidence and that feeling of achievement that the child has done it on their own, you know, whether it's on the Rangers or Explorador or you know, any of our circuits, they just are elated, and they really truly understand that how important building that self-confidence is. And, you know, it's so important here in Dubai. I mean, we all know that kids kind of tend to be a little bit spoiled in terms of expecting to be served. And, you know, and so, you know, getting a child to face their fears, getting that self-confidence, making sure that they can do things by themselves and that it's okay to have a bit of a struggle while you're doing it and learning how to do something by yourself. And that's a lot of what our park does for children.
Now, the discovery area is based on the pyramid of a child. What exactly does that mean, Lena?
So the pyramid of child development is basically is what we've based our whole discovery area on. We built it very deliberately based on research on what are the elements for a child to grow. And the base of the pyramid has three areas: proprioception, tactile, and vestibular. One is about balance, that's vestibular, and spatial thinking. Proprioception builds muscle strength, improves body awareness, concentration, and attention. And tactile is the information that's coming from touch. So when you, what, you know, understanding pressure, texture, temperature, pain, and understanding, you know, how it feels to touch water, how it feels to touch leaves, different kinds of textures of nature, sand. And so basically all of these areas get programmed into us as young humans from the ages of 2 to 6, where we're exploring the world. And as Henry David Rousseau said, a quote comes to him as, the best way to get to know oneself and the world is to play in nature. Mm-hmm. And so we've built discovery very much centered around nature. We even have an animal interaction area that teaches children about the circle of life, patience, self-control, really even the harshness of nature, you know, and the joy. So all of these things combined in terms of the childhood development pyramid was very, very deliberate in the way we built the discovery area.
Lena's with us from Aventura this afternoon. And Lena, what I wanted to kind of ask you is about kids working together, about that teamwork aspect. Is that something you've been able to address? Because, a lot, you know, when we're thinking about ziplining, for example, there's a communication piece there about, you know, making sure someone's safe at the other end before. But what about working as a team and communicating even as children?
Well, Aventura services schools with field trips. And in those field trips, we have numerous education programs that are centered around team building and connecting students where they have a task that they have to do together. And they learn on the spot what they did well, what they could have done better, and how it relates to life and their schoolwork, and how they attack different things, and how they learn to lean on each other and understand their own strengths and their own challenges. We also have our life skills camps that have elements of that, but even just the basic life skills. I mean, do you know how to tie a knot, Helen? Have you ever tied a knot?
Life? I actually do because I sail, but
okay.
I don't think my
so
kids
you know the figure eight knot
and
the butterfly
and the bow
knot.
Yeah, I do.
And we're not talking, you know, so it's not, and those simple skills that will help people be better at in life and
just
be able to handle different situations.
Yeah.
It's practical.
I want to come back to what you're talking about, that kind of tactile idea, because I think when I think about kids touching stuff, I just think about them swiping on an iPad. And you know, my goodness, we know that the pandemic just seemed to increase a lot of that. And don't get me wrong, I'm not demonizing technology. It's got a very important part to play, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I do think the pandemic kind of set us back a little bit in that sense. What kind of response have you had post-pandemic to kids getting back into nature? Is there lots of like, I'm dirty and I don't want to do that? Or is there a real appetite for that physical play and development?
Well, because we're outdoor and we're in a beautiful gaff tree forest, it's been welcomed post-pandemic. I mean, even during the pandemic, we had a lot of consumers, a huge surge of consumers coming to the park. And then once schools, field trips and groups were allowed again after the pandemic, parents have seen the importance of getting their kids and teachers and alike have seen the importance of getting kids out, because really, there's nothing better than, you know, learning through doing and getting that feeling of connection to yourself in nature and with nature. And the challenges we have are incredible as well.
Lena, there's no getting away from it. It is June. What about the weather? What are your plans for the summer at Aventura?
Well, during the summer, we stay open at night. And really, believe it or not, we're about 3 or 4 degrees cooler than by the beach, which is a good thing. We're inland a little bit. We're surrounded by trees, which also helps with the oxygen levels and all. It's cool at night until even through July. It's not bad. It feels fine in the evenings. Once the sun sets, it's gorgeous. So we're open all summer and evenings. And then we also have summer camps, which are during the winter months, we're 80% outdoors and 20% indoors. But we wanted to offer something to parents here in Dubai that's similar to Europe and the U.S. Mm-hmm. in terms of quality and in terms of offering. And so we have a 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. summer camps that basically offer the kids a variety of fun activities that where they learn and grow. And it's like an enrichment camp where they're learning about life and life skills and fun things and learning and making friends. Really, that's mm-hmm. what really it's the mostly a part of, you know, making
exactly.
friends outside school.
Making those memories and coming home and saying, I did this and yesterday I couldn't do that, but today I tried it. And this time I think that's, it just sounds wonderful. Thank you,
and
Nina.
Even I like this and I don't like that.
Yeah, so, which is useful in itself, honestly.
Fine.
You can, as you say, be found Mushrif there, Aventura. And if you want the details, do feel free to get in touch. Lina, wishing you all the very best. You've made me want to go and swing from a zip line and get mucky in nature. Absolute pleasure to have you with us. Thank you. And please do let us know if there's somewhere you've discovered here in the UAE. It could be a place, it could be a person that feel like could have something important to say and teach us here on the show. Always love your opinions, love your recommendations.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Joining us in studio is Leon Douglas. He's a personal trainer who shifted his focus to kids and created a healthy and educational platform called Yummy for Kids. Leon, you're here in your shorts and t-shirt looking very sporty indeed. Have you always been an active soul?
Yes, I definitely have. But thank you for introducing me though as well.
You're welcome. Great to have you with us. So you're a PT, but obviously have an interest in food.
Yeah.
We've already had questions about getting kids moving, getting them to eat stuff when... I was just saying to you on off air, my youngest, I was so smug. I was like, here she is with like, you know, pea puree around her mouth. That makes me a good mum. Ha. Little did I know she turned two. She was like, yeah, I'm going to mainly focus on the beige food group, mum, if that's all right with you.
So, that's his choices of food that they'll tend to like. What they see on TV as well.
Yeah, pizza. Pizza is what they see on TV. So tell us a little bit about your background then. What got you into sports and working with people?
So mainly for me, I'm from a small city called Nottingham. that's based in the UK. For me, like being in that fitness industry from there since 2007, it was more as a thing to where I was always involved into some form of sports. So I wanted obviously to continue that because I was playing basketball at the time. So from there, I tend to obviously travel a little bit, tend to work on a cruise obviously for a year. I did that as a personal trainer. That was obviously...
I bet that was fun.
It was nice. It was definitely nice.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that after.
We'll talk after 4:30. But that surprises me because many people go on a cruise and come back like 5 kilos heavier.
This is the thing. That's why I'm there. So that I can lose weight before they get off the cruise.
You want to look like you've had a holiday and people go, wow, you look amazing. Not like, wow, nice stretchy trousers.
There you go. So from basically working on a cruise, I wanted to do something that was more on land because I finished with traveling the world. I went to a lot of places within that 1 year. I went to a lot of places. So I thought, let me just come to Dubai and see obviously how I can obviously expand my expertise. I came to here and then I started obviously analysing a few things in the fitness industry that I've seen that myself that I want to obviously like tackle on. Prior to obviously working with my clients one-to-one, focusing on obviously their transformations or even mindset or even goals that even if they don't even want to lose weight, they just want to feel much more happier. Mm-hmm. They just want to obviously get out of the house. Because a lot of people tend to have them kind of jobs where they're sitting in the office all the time.
Most people do.
There you go. And they feel kind of obviously like stress and little things like that. So anything to actually help them get off obviously from the chair and moving around, I thought, you know what, focus on that. And then same time, get the kids involved as well.
I think for many people, and I definitely include myself in this, sometimes it's just about getting started.
It is about
taking that decision to put your trainers on, go for a walk. And it's intimidating to go into a gym class
for the first time. It's not. You know what it is?
I think it's
more as a fear.
It's a massive fear. And you're a sporty person. You might have never known the fear of being like the slowest or the biggest or the weakest in a group.
Well, you shouldn't think of it like that because I think that comes down to like a trauma when you as little, you feel that you can't step into something without doing something. Remember, we're not always going to be perfect at something.
Yeah, I know.
So you have to look at it as like, you know what? It's a challenge, but I'm willing to obviously like take obviously my step to it as well. Mm. And then you'll notice once you start doing like the baby steps, step by step of certain things, you'll be like, oh, this is quite easy. You know, then you go from there.
Because we build it up in our heads.
Yes.
Massively.
That's exactly what it is.
My mother's wisdom was always the stewing is worse than the doing. And it's true. Like, you think, okay, everyone's going to be looking at me. I haven't got the right clothes. And I'm saying that because these are thoughts I've had. And often it's just a case of putting yourself in the room and being like, actually, everyone's focusing on what they're
doing. Everybody's focused on their own thing. You'll see people doing selfies of themselves, whatever it is. You see you guys training, sweating, shouting. The main thing, you to focus on you and do your training, because no one really bothers. Everybody's in there for their own personal goals.
Yeah.
We don't want to lose weight or get into shape or just feel much more and better in the self.
I think for many people, many adults, you know, we're used to being in our comfort zone.
Yes.
And it's a very happy, comfortable place. So yes. why would we leave it? And unfortunately, what that can pass down to our kids is that lack of sense of adventure and not modelling the activity.
Because have you noticed, obviously, when you're a kid, you have that adventure. Mm-hmm. You'll jump off a fence, graze your knee and be like, oh, yeah. I'll get back up again. You keep doing it. After a while, as you get older now, your parents are like, oh, stop doing that because you might get hurt. Don't go down there because something might happen. Don't do so. After a while, these things come into your head thinking, okay, I'm going to stop doing this because remember, if I get hurt, then I might not be able to go work. Mm-hmm. If I strain my ankle, I won't be able to do this. So it falls that trap into our head. And then we obviously pull it onto the kids as well. Yeah. Not me, because I don't have kids, but yourself, you pull it onto the kids.
Massively.
And the kids will pick it up and do the same thing.
And unfortunately, for various reasons, we have got a massive obesity problem with kids here in the region.
Yes.
What are some of the areas that you've identified that could be contributing to that?
Well, what I've definitely noticed, especially on the statistics side as well, there's at least in the UAE and obviously globally, it's like 26 million, obviously, people that are basically submitted to the actual, obviously, disease, which is the diabetes and obesity as well. 40% of that are the ones that are basically in the ages between 20 to 79, and that's since 2019. Mm. And then 210,000 of that are kids that are adolescents and younger than that, that are prone to it and obviously don't know that obviously they're segregated to obviously diabetes as well. So it's one of them things. I think it's all about just teaching them and educating them as well based on that.
But a lot of that comes from us as parents.
You know,
it starts
from home.
It really, really does. And, you know, with the best will in the world, our schools are so busy.
Yes.
You know, 2 PE sessions a week is not enough.
It's
so
not.
I'm going to ask you next, Leon, how much exercise, how much movement, let's not say exercise, how much movement, how much activity?
Yes. Let's not say exercise. Let's look at it as like movement, just having fun, getting out of the house. Just doing something. Remember, Dubai is a big place. There's so many activities you can do. You can go to the beach. You can go Wild Wadi. You can go to all these, obviously, fun places to go to prior to being in the gym. It's not just about being in the gym. Being in the gym is your own personal goal.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Talking children's health, and it's not necessarily when we talk about health, about going to the doctor. Sometimes it's about getting out, being active and putting the right things in their little bodies. And Leon Douglas is joining us now. He's a personal trainer by trade, but has shifted his focus as well to kids, creating a healthy and educational platform called Yummy for Kids. It includes a recipe book, cartoons, and yeah, some great advice too. And he's here to share some of that advice. And Tom's been in touch saying, hi guys, my daughter's 8 years old. She's not fat, but a little on the plump side. Okay. My son is very active, always playing sports, so she feels like she can't keep up with him.
Yeah.
How can I encourage her to be active without making her feel like she's being compared to a big brother?
Okay, the best thing that you can really do, Tom, same time, you have to lead and be the one that's obviously going to encourage her as well. She sees it in you, then she's going to follow, because remember, kids follow what they basically see. Mm-hmm. Prior to that as well, the lifestyle obviously on food will be something as to where you create obviously a choice of foods where it looks fun. You can even get the kids involved in the kitchen and make something. It doesn't have to explain that it is healthy. This make something where it looks colourful.
I think that's a really good point.
Yes.
And I think that kind of healthy, unhealthy.
Yes.
I don't want my kids having these kind of weird emotions and associations with food at an early age, because unfortunately, like, disordered eating lies that way. It really does.
That's
whether
right.
that is binging or, you know, hiding food habits or, you know, restricting.
Yeah. And that is correct. That's why I would say this, obviously be a little bit more versatile, obviously, with the first book. Be a little bit more fun and obviously creative with the foods. Like, if you know that they like cookies, find another way to make a healthy alternative cookie. They can still probably have, let's say, the choc chips in there, but just find another healthy, creative way to obviously cook the dough a little bit more, obviously less, obviously like flour and stuff like that. That's basically in it. You know, if they like ice cream, you can obviously have sorbet. There's so many things that you can do just to mix it up.
I think, speaking as a parent, and I have 2 girls, so that comparison thing feels even more obvious.
Mm.
It's a really natural part of being a parent. You can't help but go, oh, they lost their first tooth at this age, or, you know, their handwriting was like this at that age.
Yeah.
So I understand that comparison, but I think we're trying to encourage our kids to find their own things.
Yeah,
And that might be a musical instrument or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So those comparisons just don't happen as much.
Yeah, you just want obviously give them the same benefits that you probably had as growing up as well. Yeah. But then same time, like I'm saying, you just have to be that lead and that encouragement. So if they see you doing it, you're eating healthy, you're trying this, you're making this healthy smoothie, they'll be like, oh, mom, what's this? Let me try it. And then you like it as well. They see the difference in you. They could obviously want to try it as well. And making sure as well, like, the fridge is colourful. Mm. Making sure there's certain things in the fridge are not like sticking out to where you can see that it's a cake in there or whatever. You just make the fridge colourful. If they tend to look at fruits as one of them things like, oh, I don't like this fruit, blend it as a smoothie. You know, all these little things. So
where I fall down is I don't like broccoli.
Okay.
And I've got to do that whole thing where I'm like, this is delicious. And then kind of to turn, because I have got one of those faces where I cannot hide my emotions. Let's go to Mira's question here, because we're talking food as well as movement. Mira saying, my child hates milk, even chocolate flavour.
Okay.
But I do want him to drink it for the calcium. He's only three. Okay. Any advice, or is there an alternative for calcium?
Calcium. There's so many things. Green leafy vegetables are full of calcium. If you don't want to eat that as consuming it, you can blend that with coconut milk or almond milk. And at least, obviously, you're going to have the same result in there with that milky kind of look. And you're going to basically drink it as well. So you're getting best of the both benefits. You know, there's so many things that you can basically do. It's just all about this, obviously, this finding that angle to where you can mix both together so they can actually do it.
You've got a recipe book.
Yes.
Who's that aimed at? Is it kids' food or adult food? So
it's kind of a mix of both. It's encouraging the adults to actually like sit down with the kids and actually teach them as well. Because what I've noticed basically being in this region as well, prior to obviously the UK, a lot of big difference is that the kids are probably a little bit more with the adults. But obviously over here, it's a little bit more, the more with the nannies. So let's look at it as a final way to where the kids can obviously be with the parents a little bit more. And they can obviously prep these meals in the kitchen, obviously create them so it's fun on both sides as well. And with that, they're going to encourage them to like want to learn more about cooking, want to obviously, we want to try and cook this today. We want to try and cook a healthy burger today. And then obviously that'll keep both of them obviously in the kitchen as well.
Really interesting message here from Bilal saying, I'm always shocked at seeing children having iced coffees, frappuccinos. Wow. Do parents not know about the hidden calories?
I think they definitely know. But like you said, it's all about giving them that choice of making them feel that they obviously want to choose what they want. Mm. Now you have to obviously put a little, like, not obviously stop on it to basically say, look, I know obviously you want this, but try this. Just because you see me having it, I might like it. Try this.
Yeah? I think I'm applying the same kind of logic. Being a parent doesn't always mean being liked.
Yeah.
I hear this a lot about car seats and seat belts. Oh, yeah. My kid doesn't like it. With respect, tough.
Tough, yeah.
Tough. Do you want your kid to be to be in an accident?
Accident.
I'm sorry.
You don't want that.
I like my kids to like me, but there is a line. And
There's parenting. And then there's friends. You have to wait, obviously, but put that little borderline.
Yeah,
you know, because as they get older, they're going to start obviously looking as like, yeah, I can do whatever I want.
Mm-hmm. What about the importance of sleep?
Sleep is definitely important. Like resting period in general. So even with obviously diabetes and obesity as well, it's not based obviously just on the food. It's based on the lifestyle factors. So anything can come with obviously depression, anxiety, sleep disorder as well. All these things can actually have effect to that, to where it's going to cause these kind of obviously diseases and illnesses as well. So sleep is definitely important. Resting is.
Question here from Mo saying, love the sound of Leon. There you go.
Appreciate that.
So you work as a PT. He's asking, do you train kids?
Yes, I train kids, group classes and one-to-one as well. And I mainly focus I don't focus on just for them to obviously be eating healthy, but just obviously encouraging them to obviously like try different foods, obviously try something fun. And at the same time, obviously just encourage them to get obviously more into the whole movement side of it than just exercise, you know?
So, sorry, I'm just trying to kind of paint a picture of what it's like to PT a kid. What's that like?
It's not that hard. It's like...
Are they doing weights? Like, what are they doing?
Not really. Just doing little fun things with them. You might do little chase. You might do certain things where it's all body weight, because you're not going to have your kids lifting, obviously, weights, are you? It's not going to really look too good.
Broken toe. Like, or,
you don't want that.
Kids with abs. Bit creepy.
You don't want that. So yeah, you're going to keep it simple. You're just going to do little fun little games for them. It's all about having them to move around. kids yeah. want to move around. That's exactly what it basically is. And for them to enable to actually think as they're doing it, why are they actually doing that movement for? What are the muscles that they were actually working? These kind of things there, because I make them think, I'm like, okay, this is fun. Oh, I worked this today. Oh, what else I'm going to basically do? I feel kind of tired. Why do I feel kind of tired? Well, without you eating chips and a burger before you start training, try having a banana or an apple. And you'll notice, oh, I feel much more energy from last time. And it's just little things like that. It's just changing the mindset.
I've got a bit of a controversial one for you.
What's up?
Anonymous message here saying, my 14-year-old is only eating vegan. I feel she's too young for this. She's still growing. As a family, we eat everything. Is it safe?
Like I'm basically saying, at the end of the day, you have your choices. But you just have to look at it as like, they might be looking at it as like they're eating healthy with society in general, the things that they're watching. But you just have to see it as like, all right, and cool. If they're doing that, let me find a way that I can add another alternative in there for them to go and have this.
Because let's be honest, there's healthy vegan eating and then there's really unhealthy.
Yeah.
If you're eating plain pasta, fries and Oreos, you could be vegan, but you're probably getting no nutrients at all.
No nutrients at all. Okay. And then obviously that's spiking the blood sugar in the body as well.
Leon, for anyone who wants to get in touch with you, obviously you've got a recipe book, but also I think the training is a really good group. Like, I love the idea of a group class for kids as well. What's the best way of getting in touch with you?
You can get in touch with me through my Instagram, Natural Physique with a Z, or through my Instagram, Yummy for Kids, Y-U-M-M-I-E, kit for
number.
Kids, that's it. And then you can get in touch with me through any of them form, obviously, apps.
If you do want Leon's details, by all means, you can message me. I'd be happy to send over a link or two. And last bit of advice, please, sir, based on all the work, all the observations you've done, is there anything that, should you come to have kids and for us parents today, you would never let them eat?
I wouldn't let them eat crisp all the time.
Oh, that's my favourite. Everything in moderation.
Everything in moderation.
Leon Douglas, absolute pleasure to have you with us.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We love it when we hear about people following their dreams, changing their lives and helping some people in the process. I think we've all got something to contribute, and one mum is teaching lessons on kindness and acceptance through her books. Hilda Youssef was a hotelier by trade, but a writer at heart, and today she is joining us as a full-time children's author. So I think, first of all, I want to say congratulations, Hilda. How are you?
Hi. Good. Great. Thank you so much.
Well, what a turnaround. As I said, you know, writing has always, you know, been there for you. Were you writing much as a child yourself?
I was. I really was. I read a lot. I was in the library all the time at school. Writing was my passion. I entered a lot of competitions. I won them, and then life took over, and I forgot all about it, sadly.
I think it's such a normal thing, whether it is wanting to, you know, act or write or, you know, perform music. We let, and you know, for good, often, you know, salary-related reasons, we kind of let go of our dreams a little bit. It might be a parent saying, you haven't got a chance of doing that. It might be a careers advisor going, well, you're really good at math, so let's do this at university. And next thing you know, you're down this route that you look around and go, I'm not really doing what I wanted to do.
But I think society also doesn't promote it, sadly. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, always at schools, it's not given the advantage that it should. And there's a lot of creative people out there. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, the way the academic system is you've got to follow a certain track and, you know, make the money, and which I get. We all have to make a living, that's for sure. But I think in today's world, there's just so much more to offer in terms of blogging or, you know, Instagram, or you can share your writings anywhere. And that's what I always tell kids when I go into a school. If you want to be a writer, start today.
If you want to be a writer, you have to write. You know, that I think that's a big trap that a lot of people fall into. It's like it's reading what's around, but it's also expressing yourself through whatever platform you choose. And it might be public, or it might be something completely private to you that, you know, it's just a journal or an email.
Totally agree.
So you started a blog before you became a published writer. Tell us about the blog.
I did. That was the thing. I was in hotels, then I quit my job to raise my children. And then one night at 11 p.m., I said, you know what? I haven't been writing. This is what I really want to do. This is maybe 8 years ago now. And I just, you know, Googled, how do you write a blog? How do you start a blog? And I called it Family Encourager. And it really was all about what I know, about encouraging, you know, people. I try to be positive in my life and always look at the bright side of things. And so I just started writing about what I know, my son being in high school or him going off to college or COVID when that came along, things like that. And it really gave me great satisfaction. And
it's so similar to my experience when I started blogging. I remember very, very vividly sitting on the sofa, and it was like 10, 11 o'clock at night, and going, I feel the need to write and to connect and to put something out there. And if I get something back, then great. But if I don't, then it's about honing those writing skills. And I think I paid $20 and got a Squarespace site, you know, that, like that. And I'm a firm believer of that kind of old adage that you should always be embarrassed of the first version that you create. And I look back at my first logo and go, oh, bless you. You know, but if you don't start,
and you have to send something out into the universe. Mm-hmm. You know, even as an artist, or if you're always fearful of what people are going to think of it, or you're never going to do anything creative, because some people will like your stuff and some people won't. It's just that simple. It's very selective.
It is, but I think for me, it was always about that connection. And even if someone disagrees with you, at least you're connecting with them. At least there's a response and a conversation, maybe. Only connect. So let's talk about how you transitioned into books then, Hilda. How did that get started? Was there a germ of an idea or a character that sparked it all?
I think, you know, COVID for me, I mean, I don't want to say that because I know it was horrible for many people and it hasn't been fun. But in my household, my child graduated in 2020. I had an extra year with him, so I can't complain. He stayed home. And it gave me a chance to just be. You know, Dubai is beautiful and vibrant, and there's always so much to do.
But it doesn't stop.
It doesn't stop. And so it stopped, right? We were in lockdown, and Snowy's my dog, and I just sat there in the garden with her, and the idea for the first book came along. And I wrote it. And then I have to admit, it was my children that said, okay, enough now. You've told us this all our life. It's my dream to publish a book. So please just go ahead and do it. And I was like, no, I don't know anything about this book business. So it's been a long learning journey for me. But I did it, and I don't regret it.
You make it sound really easy. So I did it. So I published a book. But for anyone listening who might have a character or a plot, and it could be for a children's book or, you know, something they've been thinking about for a very long time, what steps did you take?
I think learn from others. I'm good at taking back feedback and learning. I accessed a lot of different groups, writing groups and other writers, and I asked for their feedback. And, you know, I learned from others, because I'll be honest, I wrote the story. I got it illustrated. I was very lucky with Elena, my first illustrator, who's a dear friend's daughter. And then I said, okay, now what do I do with it? And I had no idea. And so then I had to learn. And thank God for your sound earlier. Thank God for Google. I was able to learn a lot, you know, and that way. So ask for help. And especially in the UAE, people are so willing to lend a helping hand.
So the big themes, and certainly from that first book, was about Snowy and Zoe and discovering this world together. How have you evolved those themes, and what are some of the big teachings you want to share with kids?
Well, with the first book, it's all about the environment and the fact that because we stayed home, we finally gave our earth a break, and the animals were happier. You know, the air was cleaner, the water was cleaner and all that. And so when I go into schools with that book, it's all about the environment and all about, you know, and the tiniest in nurseries, you know, 3-year-olds, they know that a plastic bottle should not be used, or my garbage should be put in a bin, or all these things. And so that is the message with the first book. My second book, which I wrote last year, which was not planned at all. I was not going to do a second book. It's called Snowy and Zoe's Big Life Lesson. And that's more about Zoe the butterfly being purple with wings, and all her classmates are white with 4 legs. And that's the premise of the story, that she goes into school and she feels very strange and odd. And even though she's beautiful and, you know, anybody would love to have wings probably, she felt like the strange one in that scenario. And
so you said a second one wasn't planned. Does that mean a third one is not planned but might happen?
It might. Yeah. I'm enjoying it so much. I just might do a third one.
I think books are so powerful for exploring ideas as a tool, really, for talking about things like kindness and differences and an enjoyable way of doing that. So thank you for bringing Snowy and Zoe into our lives. A message here from Morag saying, these sound lovely. Where can we buy them?
They're on Amazon.ae. They're in Kinokuniya, Magruder's, Booktopia.
Can you imagine? What would you say to yourself of 5 years ago and saying, you know, Hilda, your books are going to be on shelves?
A dream. I would have never dreamed it. Even if I dreamed it, I don't think it. You know, I'm like, I pinch myself very often.
Well, I'm so, so pleased. It's lovely to hear your story and read the stories you've created as well. So thank you. And if you do want details of Hilda's books, by all means, drop me a little line, 4001. Thank you for coming in. Really do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And there you go, your bedtime reading well and truly sorted. And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.